do you listen to podcasts in your shower?
No, no, music.
Okay, why?
I like it. It's fun. It's like, you know, I sing on the shower. It's like, you know, it's fun. And especially that, you know, very often I shower very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I just put one song and then at the end of the song, I'm just out of the shower. So.
Hello, I'm Radek.
I'm Michael.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
So the plan for today is to get back to the last week's discussion about the book Under New Management, which has some radical, less radical to some, ideas about how to run companies. And I think you also wanted to discuss some more about open offices and how much you despise them.
Yeah, I love open offices. We love open offices. Open offices are the best.
No, they're not.
Of course not. Anyway, did I tell you that I am doing David Burkus, the author of the book Under New Management, is going to interview me for his summit?
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
That's funny. Well, you should tell him some more about working remotely because they didn't cover it properly in the book.
Yeah, I want to talk to him about it, actually. So we are scheduling the interview. So it's going to be in February and it's going to be cool. I mean, I will be part of his like lineup there with the speakers. So we'll, you know, have some fun and I'll get to know him. And I will definitely talk to him about remote work and no office.
Very cool. So tell me about the open offices.
Yeah, so open offices. So we left off with the cliffhanger in the last episode. You know, I'm sure like all the listeners right now, you know, have been, you know, biting their fingernails. So why? I mean, my question was, why now that, you know, people still believe in offices, and it's fine. I mean, you know, some companies need a physical office and that's fine. And some, you know, some people want to go to an office and work at the office. So it's fine. Again, I don't question that. What I question is that with so much evidence that open offices suck for work, for, you know, intelligent people who have to have, you know, stretches of time of focused work, why people keep building open offices? Why, for example, there is an employer with a big office very close to here, and they just built a new office building, and most of the new office building is actually open office. And contrary to their previous office building that they have, that they had, is where they had separate offices for everyone. Like, so why are these companies still pushing for open offices? I mean, is it only because they can squeeze more people on a square meter? I mean, is this the only argument, or is there more?
Yeah, I wonder about that. What's the breakdown here? How many managers and CEOs actually believe that open offices are good for you, good for collaboration and the performance of the team? And how many of them just use it as an excuse to cut costs?
Exactly. So so for me, there are two things. So first of all, cutting costs, because in a factory, you can squeeze more people, mm-hmm. In a square meter. That's one thing. And then second thing is, of course, management by walking around, or you know, controlling people by walking and looking at their screens and making sure that they work, which sounds totally ridiculous. But apart from these two things, the only third one that comes to my mind is really, as you said, this innocent and totally stupid belief that open offices create better collaboration, that we can talk to more people at the same time, that we can shout to everyone and they can hear us. I mean, so there is this idea, this notion that, you know, we are more together when we are in an open office. So I think this is like, these three are the only things that come to my mind.
I don't think it's necessarily a stupid idea. It's just that it's been verified, right? And I have not, maybe I'm biased too, but I haven't heard from anyone, any actual employee working in an open office is that they enjoyed, that they think is good. The only times, and I've heard many times people talking about their open offices at their job, is how much they despise it, right?
I mean, the company that I mentioned, actually, I heard that one of the managers proposed that some of the teams move to the new open offices in the new office building, mm-hmm. and these people said, "Hell no." that was their response. Mm-hmm. They went, they visited, and the managers pressed for them. You know, they pressed them. They forced them actually, and tried to force them to actually no, tried to convince them to actually take the new approach. And still, after you know sightseeing, after what you know. Seeing how the office you know looks, and it's very modern, it's very nice. I've been to the building; it looks really beautiful. The answer kept being hell no. And in the end, I think they moved some other people to these new offices, but not the people from the building where they had the private offices.
It's actually funny. Close to me, there's an office building being built, which there aren't really like modern like. Office spaces around this area, so that's kind of new, and right now it's just concrete, so I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see how it's laid out. Like it's clear that it's going to be like all glass walls, because there are no walls, they're like empty floors right now, and there isn't like there isn't much concrete creating like rooms inside, but like those could be you know made from a light material, so we can't tell just yet, but there's a good chance it's going to be an open office.
Yeah, so I want to give something constructive, you know, not just to bash open offices. So first thing I wanted to say was what we already mentioned in the books that we read, is the fact that yes, people when people work in an office, they should have time for serendipitous meetings, you know, that you know. Seeing each other and being able to exchange ideas and everything. Mm-hmm. But for that, they have common spaces, you know, place where they hang out, they eat together lunches. Yeah. I mean, these kind of, you know, environments. But then they should be able to get back to a zone, to a place where they can actually perform focused work.
And it's not a new idea. That's how a lot of offices tended to be built, that you have this common area with a kitchen or which would be like a place where people would hang out, or you know the meme of like hanging out by the water cooler. Like there always have been these common like natural common spaces to for spontaneous collaboration and interaction with one another.
I think I even saw there was this TV show. I think it was in Spanish television. There was this TV show by the coffee machine or something like that. And so there was the coffee machine in the office, and the show was recorded like there would be a camera in the coffee machine. so you would see people coming to the coffee machine, you know, waiting for the coffee and just talking to each other. Like, so the whole office, you know, rumors and chats and, you know, and all these informal talks were by the coffee machine. So the coffee machine was kind of this confession place where everybody would just speak and meet.
Yeah, I have a sense, like what you said about, how do you say it, managing by walking around?
Yes.
That's actually a good phrase. I feel like, I mean, just from observing it and in books and in pop culture, you can notice that there is this train, this type of a manager, this type of a leader that it's someone like disconnected from the actual work, someone who doesn't do the same things, who doesn't live in the same world. But it's this person not necessarily of knowledge and skill, but primarily personality, right? It's this imposing figure of a boss who walks around and sees work being done and makes commands like a general, and like in general, like someone who's who lives in a very different silo from people doing the actual work. And so what matters to this person is the appearances. Like if you're disconnected from the actual workings of a system, like an organization, that if your leadership is based on personality and charisma and not much else, which seems to be fairly common, at least from what I can tell, there's a bias there, then that's what you're going to judge other people by.
Yeah, totally. And for me, I think I wouldn't still, I would still not, you know, cross out this argument of cost. I think many companies just you know, they're thinking, you know, this is how we're going to squeeze as many people as we can. We don't have to expand. We just have to, you know, put people closer to each other or something like that. And I think this is also the key. But then again, I see offices like, you know, the Facebook's office. Mm-hmm. Like I've been there, and then there's the new one, and it's the biggest open space on the planet, and they're proud of that. And then I just see, just, you know, total BS. I mean, total really like belief of Mark Zuckerberg that this is the way to work, because I mean he has all the money in the world. He can build really fantastic offices if he wanted to, but instead of that, he hires one of the top architect, you know, companies to actually build crap, mm-hmm. to build an open office, the biggest open office.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, how cool is that?
And that's kind of strange, because with Mark Zuckerberg, like I don't see him being this archetype, you know, this kind of a manager who's built on personality and
exactly
an extroversion. Like he coded the initial version of Facebook. He is a nerd.
He's smart.
He is an introvert, as far as I can tell. So yeah. it wouldn't seem like he would be the kind of person to just for whom it would be natural to work this way, with like being surrounded by lots of people and just talking to each other all the time. Like I haven't met the guy, but it doesn't feel like he would be this kind of type. So cost, but as you say, I'm not entirely sure it would matter to Facebook that much. Maybe it would, but I
mean,
don't know.
They just hired the top. I mean, they bought the ex-Sun Microsystems campus. They hired the best and the most expensive architect, you know, offices in the world. So like, no, it's not cost. That's why it's so strange for him and for Facebook to do something like that.
So that would suggest that at least for Facebook, it is about the cultural belief in the industry that this is the way to go.
Yeah. This belief that, you know, open space is open collaboration, and we exchange ideas. Ideas are floating around. You catch an idea because it just goes around here.
And that's kind of strange. I wonder how that relates to our quests to show people that you don't need to have an office at all. Because on one hand, having an open space is going further away from being remote, right? If you have private offices or like smaller office spaces that are more isolated from another, that are quiet, then that creates a culture which is a lot closer to what we expect and value. On the other hand, maybe this would be like a trigger that this is like so bad that people will notice that this completely doesn't work, and like maybe let's find something else. That this would be like a trigger that would push people, you know,
to the other extreme.
Yeah, like it would push people through the threshold where they would feel like they need to like figure something out from scratch and not just iterate and go back to the different kind of office, which would be interesting.
Yeah, just get me out of here, right? So, well, anyway, so that's why I still don't get it, and I'm confused why, for example, in the case of Facebook, why they do that. I remember my visit to David Allen's company when David Allen was still in California, and he had an office there, and I really liked his office because it was a very nice idea. Of a mixture of private office with a little bit of more, like you would see people because there were all glass walls, right? Mm. So you would see other people in the office, so you wouldn't be totally isolated. But on the other hand, you had a private office, a small one, but a private office. And then you could open it, and actually the door were like sliding doors, so like practically the wall to your office would slide, so you could actually have it more open if you wanted to, for example, like to be able, you know, to be more inviting to other people, for other people to join you. And then in between all these offices, like in the corridor, there was a pond with like a small waterfall.
Nice.
So this would create this natural noise, like a subtle noise of water, which was first calming, but second, it was canceling out the noises in these private offices. So for example, even if you would be on a Skype call, people wouldn't hear you because of the water, you know, in the corridor.
I think that makes a lot of sense. What this book mentioned, it cited some research. It suggested that perhaps the single factor that contributed most to open offices, not being very good is sound privacy. Like it's not just the fact that you're with lots of other people, but that you hear and other people hear you. Right.
Yeah. That's why it was so smart, because it was they were kind of private offices, but you could have them more open. But then again, with the water, you could have more isolation. And it made me feel that, you know, I see that I'm here as a part of the group. So I'm not alone here in this office. There are other people working, but we are very pretty close to each other, but we're not disturbing each other. Mm. But of course, I mean, this was David Allen getting things done. I mean, he's the guy to know how to get stuff done.
Also, an interesting example would be Basecamp's office, which has desks as in an open space. I mean, it doesn't have doors. The desks are just laid out on next to each other. But what they have is they insist on keeping a discipline as in a library, which is that you just don't talk in the common space. So the desks are not isolated from one another, but it's supposed to be quiet, like at all times silent, because people want to work. And then in the small conference rooms, like if you want to talk with other people, you bring them to a small conference room. And all of the walls are highly isolated. So all of the walls would be filled with just sound isolating material, and all the glass panes would be very thick to muffle the sound.
Yeah, I think it's very smart. I mean, I've been to this office, so I really liked it how they built it. But I'm still not 100%. Agreeing. I mean, I don't think you should work at such an open environment anyway. You know, I mean, it's great on one hand because you have like more air to breathe, you know, so you're not closed. But for them, I mean, what they do is really, if they really keep the library, you know, discipline of being in the library, then it makes sense.
But it doesn't scale. They only have like, you know, 10 or 10 desks or something. They have like, you know, less than 20 people there.
Exactly. Yeah, and I like what they wrote it somewhere that when two people start chatting, they're like, "Hey, get a room," which is totally cool.
Okay, let's move to the other part.
So before we move, I just wanted to say that I invite other people who just tuned in, you know, for this episode, to check our episodes on pyramid of communication, where we talk more about it. And actually, on my blog, I just published the book No Office Apps, where actually there is a lot about pyramid of communication and how we communicate in our company. So to give you more, so there is this promotion here of my free ebook, and based on our chats here on the podcast. So over there we talk about how we communicate. How we communicate effectively, and why we don't need an office at all to actually communicate effectively.
We'll put the links in the show notes.
Yep.
Okay, so let's move on to to more discussion from the book. There's been two, I think, interesting things that we didn't discuss last week.
Yeah, there is the notion of transparent salaries.
Mm.
And I wanted to talk to you about it because especially that, you know, that you are an employee, I am the owner, the founder of the company. Mm. So we have two different points of view on this subject. So I wanted to, you know, chat with you about that. So there are companies that try to be very transparent. Like, for example, there is the Buffer app company, and they actually publish how much they pay everyone in their company. They have a whole, you know, formula how they calculate salaries based on the time they're with the company, based on where people live. So they like people in San Francisco get more money because otherwise they would be homeless, and like all things like that, right? So they have the whole formula for a transparent salary for everyone at the company. And on one hand, I think it's pretty smart. And from the salaries in our company, I can already see that actually over time, through trial and error, I actually kind of developed a similar formula. I mean, you know, based on right now, when I look at all these salaries across all the salaries in our company, I think, you know, they're a lot more standardized than before. And where in the very beginning, nobody would officially know anyone's salary, now that we hire, and a concept also from the book, but a concept that we've already developed before reading the book, is that our team hires people. Mm-hmm. So when we hire somebody, people who hire this person actually know how much this person is going to get paid, because they have to talk to them and show them the offer before this person talks to me. So,
right, so but that's only like two people. Or something that's not like most of the team never gets involved in hiring, so it's not exactly what the book proposed.
Exactly. So no, but what I'm saying is that a few people already, like a few more people know the mm-hmm. the salary right at the get-go, and also now what I've introduced in our company is that, for example, the head of each we have two big like departments in our company. This is customer support and the developers.
Mm-hmm.
So now the heads of the departments actually know or will know now the salaries of everyone in their team, because they are the heads and they should be actually responsible for the raises and not me, because they actually work with these people and not me to be responsible of how much people earn. So this is something that I'm right now gradually introducing in the company. So there is a lot more transparency than it used to be, because in previously nobody knew officially how much people were earning. The problem I have with this kind of transparency is, but maybe it's wrong approach. So that's why, you know, I want to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, I understand transparency. I think it's good. But on the other hand, the problem is that very often, if you see, okay, this person earns that, you as another person working at the company, you might not know what this person actually does in the company, or you know, have a vague idea. So because this person works in like in a different department, for example, you might it would be hard for you to assess this person's salary, because you know they're doing different thing. You know, you're paid for your thing, and you can argue that, for example, the other developer, you know, he's better or worse than me, and maybe he should earn more and less. You know, maybe you could argue it here, but it would be hard for you to argue about somebody, for example, from this customer support team or, you know, marketing team. And on the other hand, so it's like when salaries are totally transparent, on one hand, this may create a nice environment that everybody knows it's, you know, we are more or less the same, or, you know, these some people have more, but, you know, it's justified, but then it would have to be justified. You know, it's like my problem is that I think people in the team might not have all the data and might, you know, underestimate or overestimate some salaries.
Mm. But on the other hand, like, why would someone from development, for example, care and try to judge salaries of people from another department. Like if it's not related to you, then I don't think people would care at all and like would understand that they don't have insight into it. So like whatever. What's more likely to happen is people trying to judge and like maybe like again over or underestimate people from their team, or maybe like not people they work with directly, but like close to, like for example people inside development, right?
Yeah, that's why. Tell me, I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you think? I mean, for example, let's say you would know all the salaries of everyone on the dev team, mm-hmm. on the people that on the team that you're in. How would that affect you? I mean, what would you? You know, if you knew, for example, that this guy earns more than you and this guy earns less than you, and you might or might not agree with that. So, what would you think?
Yeah, that's very interesting, right? Because my first reaction is like it's like deeply uncomfortable because this is not something I'm used to, and it's not common at all in our culture for your salaries to be transparent. And there is this thing that like you said, knowing someone else's and like not agreeing with it, that could hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, like and I think this is I feel like it's easier. It would be easier in a larger organization. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like in a larger organization, when there's more people and possibly like more standardized, like more maybe formal pay grades or something like that, it would be easier to see. But I don't know. Like in a small team, it could affect people badly. On the other hand, if you find out in whatever way anyway, and you have the same feeling, then you can't do anything about it because it's like you weren't supposed to know anyway, and like you don't have all the data because you don't know anybody else's. And when you know all the numbers, then that's easier to juggle. And when the numbers are derived from like the same some base values, then you can argue about those values, right? Like maybe level of experience or role or whatever, like you can argue about the numbers that from which the salary is derived.
Yeah, so the thing is that what my concern is that people start then, you know, talk and judge, you know, these salaries and talk about them. And what we all basically want, you know, the Maslow's, you know, theory that, you know, we have money covered because we're earning good money, mm-hmm. so we focus on other things. And then suddenly we are back to the conversation about money, although, you know, we've already covered that and we're good, right? So mm-hmm. it for me, it's like it stresses again the money instead of, you know, actually our things that we have to do.
Yeah, an interesting formulation that I think I got from PeopleWare was that like in organizations, money is a hygiene factor. So it's not like less or more is better or worse. It's more like there is a it's something you have to satisfy. Like if it's not enough, then that's bad, and if it's enough or more than enough, then you just don't care about it. You don't tend to think about it much because that's a need that's satisfied, and then other things are more important because other things affect you more day to day. And you're right. There is a danger that if it's public and people can see it, and again they won't necessarily agree with all of it, then this can cause, you know, tensions that are not necessary.
Yeah, that's why it's a tough subject. You know, it's a tough thing. I mean, I'm already, you know, when we assess the salaries in the company, I'm trying to be as fair as possible. And so in the moment that somebody actually would know what I know, they wouldn't be, you know, like, they wouldn't say, oh, this is ridiculous. They would say, oh, it's okay, right?
Right.
Like, so it's already like that. So because, you know, in the when I was first hiring, like, first few people in the company, like, the salaries were all over the place because I you know, I didn't know how much this person should earn. And, you know, there was this basic question of, you know, how much do you want to earn? This kind of, you know, this is stupid. So one piece of advice I want to give, you know, to make this conversation a little bit more constructive, is that when you're a very small company, this is the first thing, you know, you're trying to get people cheaply because you want, you know, you're very, you know, you know that you don't have lots of money, but you need the job to be done. So you try to hire people as cheaply as possible. So you just, like, you start asking them how much they want to earn, and then you go from there and negotiate. And you know, so this is what you do in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. But at some point, like, already organization our size, like 20 something people, we don't do that anymore. So we say, okay, we need a graphic designer, or we need a new developer, and this is our budget for it. So this is, you know, how much this person is going to earn, and that's it. So because we know the salaries of our other, for example, developers, we know, like, more or less what we can, you know, offer at this, you know, at this knowledge skill or knowledge level, let's say. And so we start, and when we start, you know, we give them a little bit less, and then we, you know, promote them. But we know the basic, you know, price point, like, that we are going to offer. And of course, if somebody shows up and they say, no, it's bullshit, I don't want to, you know, I want to earn a lot more. Okay, you're not a match for the company. That's fine. No harm done. And if somebody who's been earning almost nothing in the previous company, but has proven, you know, through the hiring process that he's a very good person and a very good, you know, very good professional, he's really fantastic, and we tell him, you know, you're going to earn this, he's going to be like, whoa, oh my God, you know, I have so much money now, right? so and this has happened to us, you know, in the past, that we had a new hire and we gave them more than double of his last paycheck. But this is what we offer. So and if the person is the match for the job, this is our, you know, price point. Although, you know, the smart entrepreneur should be like, I'll give you 20% more from the last paycheck.
I mean, that's perhaps the biggest consideration from an employee's perspective. Like, I realize that, at least in theory, like, you say that you don't do that, or you don't do that anymore because we're larger. But like, in general, like, in a say a regular like average company, salaries are skewed by the information asymmetry. The boss knows all the numbers and you only know your numbers, right? So you can be convinced to pay for less, whereas people who will just negotiate more will get more, right? And so by making salaries transparent, then in the long term, it will almost certainly be good for the employee or for an average employee, because there's no way for the employer to get them to agree to less when they know that it's not fair, it's not equitable in this company.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why, for example, as I said, we graduated from this idea of, you know, negotiating the salaries in the very beginning. So we did that. I mean, I'm totally, you know, guilty as charged, you know, in the very beginning when I was hiring my first people. I mean, that was how I operated, because I didn't know any better, and of course I didn't have that much money to pay in the very beginning. So yeah, but now. I think we're gradually getting there to the you know, more transparency. So as I said, you know, right now the heads of the departments will know the salaries because they will decide on the raises and not me. So this is like a big step in our company. So I think maybe eventually we'll actually get there to transparent salaries. Maybe actually this is like maybe you know. What my concern is that people start, you know, analyzing other people's salaries and all these things. Maybe this will just happen, you know, in the first, you know, week or two, and then, you know, there will be just old news and people will just, you know, focus on their work and everything will be done. So even if we didn't have the transparent salaries, I mean, I can tell you that from my perspective that I've been trying to design the salaries in our company in such a way that if somebody showed them to everyone today, there would be, you know, the least, you know, surprises. You know, it should be, you know, pretty okay, like for everyone involved. So
that I think that makes a lot of sense. Like the worst thing that one could possibly do is have salaries that are not kind of fair, that are not equitable, that don't follow some reasonable pattern, and then just make them transparent, and then like everyone is like, what the hell, right? But I don't know. I guess it makes sense that it makes sense to try to do it kind of step by step. Like if you go like in that direction, then it will be easier to make a smaller step to go from, you know, some people, like people knowing from like their part of the company, or like people who are maybe you know, just maybe some regular people who maybe were also involved in the hiring process or something like that. That would be like a smoother transition. There would be like less risk that there are some things in the salaries that people judge as unfair.
So there's this story that I heard somewhere or read somewhere that I think it was, there was, the story was about, I think, Henry Ford's company that he had. So I might get the story wrong. So there was a story that somebody was visiting Henry Ford's factory, and they were surprised how well it was working. Like people, you know, knew what to do. I mean, they had this factory. They would build this black Model T cars, and everything was working like clockwork. And everybody was, you know, working really hard. And then they would go to the offices, and also over there, everybody was working hard, like clockwork. But then there was an office of a guy, and he was just sitting at the desk, doing nothing. And then after, like, they've seen the offices and everything, they were like, "So, Mr. Ford, I think, I mean, what you show here, it's fantastic. It looks really well done. What we don't understand is, why is this guy on your payroll who just sits there in this office somewhere and just, you know, doesn't do anything?" And then his answer was, "Yeah, I mean, this guy, he's not doing anything, you know, but he's one of the best paid people in the company, because he had this idea a while ago and it made us millions. And then he had another idea and made us millions more. So now he's thinking on the third idea." So so, you know, it shows.
And what's the connection to salary transparency exactly?
The connection is that this person apparently doesn't do anything, but because it's hard to judge from his, you know, busy work what he's actually doing, but his impact on the bottom line is enormous. That's why he's being paid well.
So what you mean is that the risk is that some people might not know, you know, information that would, you know, suggest like why someone is paid some amount.
Yeah, it's of course it's a big exaggeration. I mean, nobody would keep. I mean, right. Hard to keep a person that has like an idea in, like once in, I don't know, many years. But that's what I'm saying is that, you know, that's one of the risks, is that, you know, people don't know all of the story, and they would judge somebody's salary based on just what they see. It's like, again, it's like in the office. If you have a traditional office, many people fake busyness because they show up on the meetings, they say a lot of things, but they actually don't provide any value. They actually don't do any work. They just show up and they just are loud, and people think that they are, you know, busy people, right? And then there are people who just get things done, and this is the same thing, you know. That's why what I'm saying is, with transparency, the problem is that not everybody has all the data, right? But again, in a company like ours, I don't have all the data anymore. So I don't have all the data on all the programmers in our company, how well they work, you know, how they, you know, work as a team, in a team environment. So I have to rely on my direct reports for that. So my direct reports should actually know their salaries of their people to be able to, you know, to judge the salaries if they are, you know, actually on the right level. Complicated subject here.
Yeah. We should probably get back to it at some point in the future, see if our opinion on this has changed.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, to close this whole episode, which is long and kind of, you know, complicated, but I think has lots of questions. And so if you have, you know, if you have any questions to us, just post them on Twitter to us, and then we'll discuss this on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So we can really, you know, take this discussion on a new level.
Yeah, but definitely if you, dear listener, have some opinions or experience with salary transparency or open offices, give us a shout out on Twitter or email us. It'll be interesting to see more data points.
Exactly, because we are not know-it-alls. And so one thing I wanted to close this discussion also on the book under new management was this thing that what we today actually mentioned. When a team hires, because they in the book there was also this whole thing about team hiring people, which mm-hmm. which is already what we do, and as we discussed today,
do we?
The team hires new person. I mean, I'm the last one to actually be in the interview process. So if somebody is on the dev team is to be hired, I don't hire them. The dev development leads are doing the whole hiring process, and I'm the last one to talk to this person. And what we have improved in our process is that right now, as we mentioned, we already know how much we're going to pay this person. So when in the hiring process, the team, I mean the leads of the department, they hire a new person because they want them on the team, and they offer them the job with, you know, these conditions. And then when they accept it, then there is the interview with me. And if I don't see any red flags, I just say, go with it. I mean, if you want this guy or this girl, you have them. So we have that already in our company, that the team hires a new person. The same goes with customer support, and the same right now will go with marketing, because I am the head of marketing in our company, but I also want to take myself as much out of this as possible, only to influence it when I really need to. So this is the idea that no longer the boss is hiring, the team is hiring. And we are taking this to a whole new level in our company because of some situations that happened in our company in the past, that actually we are going to move it so that the team will also fire people and not the boss.